It's hour two of In Deep. I'm Angie Claro. There is more to activism than boycotts. There's more to boycotts than threatening not to buy. There's the art of engaging, for example. A radio shows advertisers as allies instead of targets. There are agencies you can enlist, others you may as well not bother with. This hour, we sit down with Spock, a longtime undercover activist who successfully targeted San Francisco Hate Radio, Michael Savage, and more. Secrets from Spocko coming up on In Deep right after the news. And indeed, it is our look at the news through the very special lens of our demented sidekick, Buttercup. It's got a laugh from thepoliticalcarnival.net, and she always has her own special take on the news. Hey there, girl.
Hey there. You know, I have been so busy trying to perfect my slutitude by publicly ingesting birth control pills on the corner of Yucca and Las Palmas.
Now, do you take one every time you do it, or do you just take one?
You know, sometimes I take two if it's a really good session. I'll go ahead and take two pills, and it runs up the bills.
I can see that turning into bar talk. You know, you're checking out the guy across from you. Is he a one-piller or a two-piller?
Oh, yeah.
That boy's a three-pillar. So what's the news through your eyes, my darling woman?
Well, speaking of sluts, there's a guy who should be called a slut, a cartoonist, an editorial cartoonist, Mike Lester, who had a cartoon up that depicts President Obama as a pimp and Sandra Fluke as his prostitute, and he's saying she just wants to have recreational sex and you to pay for it. It's not exactly a new concept. You know what is a new concept? How bad that was, how offensive and racist and disrespectful and terrible that was.
You know, I wonder how long a cartoonist of that ilk has been waiting to put an icon of Obama in a pimp suit.
You know, it was, well, I'm sure when he saw, what's his name, James O'Keefe go at it, you know, in his own pimp suit, he probably got the idea and was, like you said, waiting to pounce. I mean, this is just so bad. And it's inaccurate. It's completely inaccurate. I mean, Sandra Fluke was there defending her friend who has an ovarian cyst and ended up in the hospital because she couldn't access birth control, her birth control pills.
If we are going to pay for your contraceptives, if we're going to have to pay for this, and thus pay for you to have sex, we want something for it. Now, we want something in return. We want you to post the videos online, the videos of all this sex, post it online so we can see what we are getting for our money.
But meanwhile, this guy is also an illustrator of children's books.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, that's really appalling.
Yeah. It is, and the odd thing is at the Herman Agency, who represents him, according to a fellow, well, I don't know if he's a blogger, but he did a guest blog for us. He did some research, and he said that the department of the children's book art that this guy is represented by, it's all women. So why aren't they, I mean, maybe they are by now, but you'd think they'd kick up a little bit of a fuss with their client putting up cartoons like this.
I don't expect them to do it publicly, but boy, I sure hope they do it behind the scenes.
They should drop him as a client. I mean, really, if they're doing children's books and he's putting this stuff up, I can't see how they continue to represent him. So who knows? But it would be nice if the guy at least cartooned based on fact. And the whole cartoon is wrong in every respect.
So what else grabbed your eye this week?
Okay, so I love this. Newt Gingrich is at AIPAC.
Oh, yes.
And there's footage of him that I put up. I think you have a copy of it where he is falling asleep. He keeps dozing off and they keep catching him on camera. And then they call him up to the podium to speak. Well, I don't know if you want to play it first or you want me to describe it.
Go ahead and describe it. We want to hear it from you.
Okay. He gets up there thinking he's doing a panel and there's no such panel. He's not. He's supposed to give a speech, and he's just completely like, huh? And, you know, they talk about CNN described Mitt Romney as competent, and now I know why. Compared to this, my God, how humiliating.
And you know what's really funny is that as a radio piece, one of the reasons to opt not to play it is the long, embarrassing silence after the MC or however you care, the person who introduced him, threw it to him. There he is with his huge head over the stage on the video screen, waiting for something to happen while the audience waits for him to happen. And that's about
it. That's called a pregnant pause. And now we know why they need to use birth control.
I'm an old man. I hate everything but mad life. Ooh, it does now.
So, Laffy, you want to do that other little extra bit?
Sure. I'm still just laughing at the Gingrich thing. I mean, how he was completely unprepared for this whole speech he was supposed to. He was scheduled, and he thinks he's on a panel. What an idiot. Okay. Karl Rove, it's just a quickie. It was just a little quickie that I found. Sarah and Todd Palin, Karl Rove, was doing some fancy pageant talking about Sarah and Todd also, too.
I've missed hearing you do that.
I'm sure that your splitting stuff really made you miss me. Anyway, they were endorsing, as you know, Newt Gingrich for the Alaska primary, and a lot of good that did. And Karl Rove nailed it, actually. He said, this demonstrated that endorsements don't mean snot.
Ooh.
So basically he's saying that the Palin's opinion or endorsement is not worth snot. And I got to admit, he's snot wrong on this one. I could go on, but I won't.
I think that's a lovely place to leave it. Thank you, my dear.
Okay.
Good stuff. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Take it easy.
And you know what, Laffy? Actually, we've already come to the end of our time. As ever, my darling woman, it's wonderful to have you here. And we'll be sending our listeners over to you to catch you on the politicalcarnival.net. Thank you ever so much for being here.
Thank you, gorgeous.
Gotta Laugh joins us at this time every week on In Deep Radio for her own special take on the news. You can hear this and all of our other Gotta Laugh archives at indeepradio.com. This is In Deep. I'm Angie Coro. Hey, you want to be an activist? Well, boy howdy, partner, can we tell you how to be an activist? In our last hour, we focused on the Rush Limbaugh boycott, the so far surprisingly successful consumer and advertiser action against the right's biggest broadcast force. Now, this hour, we're going beyond that particular boycott into background of the activism, the logistics behind the success, and the techniques to engage and persuade to your political message. And we're going to do that with a guest who I'm going to go with the one name, and I'm going to let him do the rest. He is widely known as Spocko. He does much of his work undercover. So I'm, first of all, welcome, Spocko. Nice to have you in the studio again.
Glad to be here.
And I'm going to take the unusual step of having you do your own introduction, because you can reveal as much about the work you do as you like. You can reveal as much about what names you publish under as you like, and I'm going to not touch the rest.
Yes, I like to go with Spocko, just one word, kind of like Cher or Sting.
You look like Cher. Kidding.
Throwing my hair back. I think one of the things I'll talk about, you know, today is why I chose to, you know, do this synonymously, but also the kind of reasons that if you're going to be involved in any kind of activism, you have to have kind of your own little narrative story, because that's fun for the press as well. So going into my background, I'm a professional communicator. And I've been involved in a lot of corporate communications for the last 25 years. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the campaign that I used to help defund the hosts on KSFO. And since then, I have advised the people groups using some of the same techniques for Michael Savage, against Glenn Beck. I'm an advisor to Color of Change. And I also have, in addition to those kinds of advice, I'll tell people that the kinds of advice that I do goes all the way back to a little technology startup called Google and Facebook. And you might have heard of AOL. eHarmony and a few others that people may not have heard of. But that is my background. And I am very interested in talking about some of the things that I not only have learned, but also that I've been teaching people for the past 5 years in order to be more effective.
And I'm glad that our listeners are going to have that takeaway. I want them to walk out of here with at least a 1, 2, 3 on how to be more active than they are. A lot of them want to and have no idea how to do it. I want to touch on one more personal thing, though, and that is I want them to be able to assess what risk one takes on. Let's be realistic about it. You know, as someone who was organized for a union, that was, you know, very dangerous. And there are a number of people we've had on the air who don't let their personal information out. What are the real risks that our listeners are assuming if they're going into activism, and how do they protect themselves?
Wow, great question. Real risks, in some ways, we're seeing it right now with Sandra Fluke. Or is that how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. there is a number of people who are quite happy to do, you know, cyber stalking and, you know, attacking people. And I think that that's a real issue. And that's one of the reasons why I believe it's important for people to have the ability to create, you know, pseudonymous and or anonymous identities. There's so much focus, again, on the people who are, you know, using it for bad purposes. There's a reason for this. Now, in my case, I was making it clear to advertisers back in 2006 that the hosts on talk radio, specifically KSFO, were saying incredibly vile things. They were anti-Muslims, anti-gay, bigotry, violent rhetoric. And I ended up, by putting these some of the audio clips up on the air, I ended up getting threatened to sue by a major corporation, ABC Disney. And, you know, that was a huge financial thing that I was afraid of. And also my worrying about my family, worrying about people, you know, on the right wing. They are, I'm a huge person. I'm not that large. I'm a very thin person.
You loom large.
I believe in privacy, and my wife more so than I. And one of the reasons I backed off on this, besides the fear of, you know, financial attacks, was the fact that one day my wife came home and said, you know, she was having, you know, heart palpitations. This is very, you know, stressful. And so I said, you know, I need to pull back. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about when you go into this is understanding is, do you have allies? Do you have support? And one of the things that I did was understanding how the rules work and understanding what I was open to. So I was very clear. I worked with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, knowing what I could and couldn't say, what I was going to publish and not publish. So I always knew that I was within the boundaries of fair use. I knew what libel and defamation and slander, all those things work like. And I'm just generally a polite guy. And so I don't usually swear, and I make it very clear what it is that I'm for and against.
All right. So we've given the listeners the scary stuff up front, and we're going to spend the rest of the hour telling you how rewarding this work can be, because it really can. When you're doing work that jibes with what you know to be right, there's a great deal of reward. So let's do talk about KSFO. And for our listeners who aren't familiar, the KSFO were landmark icon call letters once upon a time for fun pop DJs and good rock and roll, and no longer. Now they're associated with hot talk, or, you know, incendiary talk. Melanie Morgan has been heard on the East Coast as well. She is back here in the Bay Area. Brian Sussman started as a weatherman who takes that as a full license to deny global warming. And Lee Rogers, who I have worked with on the air, and my experience with him personally was very pleasant. I was his traffic reporter. Not much you can get in trouble with there. But put them together, and they did, in fact, as you said, come out with violent rhetoric. They came out with very dismissive rhetoric based on race, based on gender. So when you started deciding you wanted to do something about this, what was your first step?
My first step was actually to do research and to find out in the past if somebody wanted to have an impact on this, is to find out what had worked, what didn't work, and what would work for me in this particular environment. And one of the things I looked at was the FCC, because a lot of times I talk to people and go, I would play them the audio clips, because they say, I never listen to that stuff. I'd play them the audio clips and say, here's Brian Sussman talking about telling a listener to say Allah is a whore. You know, that was a quote. You know, come on, prove to me you're not Islamist. You know, say Allah is a whore. Tell me you like bacon. You
charming.
Know? Yes. And so I looked, the FCC didn't really care about this kind of speech. It was not regulated, even though they're on a regulated medium. The right wing had used the FCC and those broadcast medium rules to go after Howard Stern. And they also used the power of legislation to raise the fines for indecent and obscene speech. And I thought, well, I can't believe that them talking about wanting to kill people on the air. Melanie Morgan talked about wanting to hang a journalist. And I thought, that wouldn't that be covered? Well, it turns out it wasn't. So what I did was I said, okay, what's the other area that people have gone in the past? And that's where they said, well, let's try and, you know, boycott them. And one of the things I found out about that was a boycott would not be effective with advertisers if advertisers had already discounted you as a powerful force. So
what does that mean?
Well, they have segmented up the marketplace, and they say, if I hear from this group of people saying they're going to boycott listening to the station, I don't care. They're not listening to it anyway.
Ah.
And also, because I work with a lot of corporations, in my day job, I prepare people to talk to the media. So I've my background. So I've trained the people from the founders of Google, founders of Sun Microsystems. I've trained the COO of Facebook and the CEO of AOL are all my clients.
So you've seen that from the inside.
Yeah.
You know these people.
And I know what they care about. And what they care about is their brand. They do not want their brand hurt and tainted. So my insight on this case was to go to the advertisers and say, look, these people are saying horrible things right before your commercial. Does this match your brand values?
And you brought them examples.
Yes.
You played them things.
And I sent them, you know, emails. When I was doing this, this was before Twitter and Facebook, back in the olden days. So we didn't have these kind of tools. So I would send them email. In some cases, I would call them up on the voicemail and I would say, this is what they're saying right before your commercial. And then their response was, what? I can't believe this. And so they would then, you know, call their ad buyer and verify it. The ad buyer would say, yeah, well, I never listened to the show. I'm just looking at the numbers. And then they would then go back and call the rep and say, what the heck is this?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the point where I was able to use the various different personalities of the hosts against them. And as I know you've talked about the Rush story in the earlier thing, is that a thing that activists need to understand is that, you know, people like Rush are a moving target. In his case, a slow moving target, but still a moving target, that they will constantly use various different excuses and reasons and rationale to get away from this kind of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, what I chose, again, was a market-based pressure. I didn't choose an FCC pressure because people on our side would say the typical, I don't like what he has to say, but I'll defend to the death the right he said to say it. What I tell them is saying, let him say whatever he wants. He can still have that right, but he doesn't have the right to get rich doing it.
Yes, and as I mentioned in the last hour, no one has a constitutional right to a radio show either, which is an interesting side aspect of the free speech that's constantly brought up from the other side. You are listening to Angie Carter on In Deep, and my guest is Spocko. He operates under pseudonym for reasons already explained. We're going to get more techniques on how one tackles this kind of boycott or other activism as we continue, so stick around for that.
Queen, yeah, I will
It's a textbook on activism here on In Deep. I'm Angie Caro. Spaku is my guest. We're looking at the Rush Limbaugh boycott and other consumer and listener activism that you can take part in. If some of the work around women's health rights, around birth control, around what's been going on with Rush Limbaugh, if all of that compels you to do something and you don't quite know how to do it, this is a great hour for you. And if you've missed any part of it, you can go to indeepradio.com and hear the whole thing all over again. You'll also see a piece that was written by Spaku for one of our earlier hours, and that was when we worked on Alec. He worked very hard on that hour with us. In fact, he's working on an upcoming hour on SOPA, too. So we're pulling him from behind the scenes to put him here on the microphone. Spaku, we were talking about the activism against KSFO, a lot of hate radio coming out there with Melanie Morgan, Brian Sussman, Lee Rogers, and you started to approach the advertisers. What kind of response did you get?
Well, the response was interesting because most of them had no idea about this. And so they were just, and that was one of my things. I knew that they didn't even have any audio clips of it. And now, again, you know, things have changed. Now people like Media Matters were capturing some of the audio clips. Podcasts were available. At the time, there was no podcast available. There was no record of this. They just went out into the ether and disappeared. But now with digital technology, we can record them and show this is exactly what they have said. So some of the advertisers were, they used a certain phrase, which is, you know, we don't know exactly what they're saying. We support all sorts of people. But because I gave them specific audio clips showing them with their ads, they could say, well, I guess we did say that. And that was the next step. And this is something that I did because I work so closely with a lot of corporations. I say, give them a reason and an excuse. You know, like a reason, excuse for them to pull their ads. And that's where you get to say, and this is a phrase you'll be seeing in a lot of different advertisers pulling their ads for Rush. They'll say, his comments aren't in line with our values.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started doing this, what I did is I went to the advertiser's webpage. I said, let's look at your mission statement. Let's look at your marketing, you know, key points, your HR guidelines and ethics, and say, it says here that you are, you know, anti-discriminatory, you're against violence, you will not allow these kind of things in your corporation. Then why would you pay to have a spokesperson who is this discriminatory, who is this anti-gay, who is talking about killing people?
This is a huge takeaway. You know what I'm hearing here, as opposed to what the average person probably does? Bless their heart, they're doing the right thing to make the call, to take the activism. But I'm wagering most of activism takes the form of calling up the place and saying, I find this guy offensive, which is an I statement, or this guy is offensive, which is about them. You're talking about making it about the advertiser. It's the you statements.
Right. And in my letter, and it was one of the letters that Mike Stark then posted on Daily Kos, I turned it into, what is this to your brand? And I said, here's examples of what you say about your brand. Here's examples that you say about you. I wrote three people within the organization: the person in charge of human resources, the person in charge of marketing, and the PR person. Now, nowadays, we got Twitter. We just put a Twitter thing. But we still need to understand that the advertisers need to have their own understanding of why they're leaving so they can tell their customers and also their boards. Because a lot of them, they'll say, all we're saying is this is a demographic and we're, you know, buying into that demographic, that you're the customer, that, you know, that's who they're going to. I said, if you say that you actually want this person to, you know, be your sponsor, and a lot of times the advertisers like Rush, they'll read the ad copy, so they are their spokesperson.
And that actually costs more. You pay for a live read. That costs more.
See, I didn't know that. I mean, I kind of knew that. But so, for example, I use this when United Airlines was an advertiser for a while on the Brian Sussman show, and Lee Rogers or those people, and they did a live read. Well, what I did is I showed them the live read followed by the audio clip of them talking about, I think I can say this on the air, about suggesting of Barack Obama having anal sex with his wife.
Oh, my God.
And I said, now, if it doesn't help, if it helps you visualize this better, envision him saying these things while wearing the United Airlines livery. You know, because he said that thing, and then he did the live read of your commercial. So,
that's very powerful.
And one of the things I did also is I went and read the United Airlines, their relationship agreements that they have with their vendors. So they were a vendor. This is what their vendor is doing with their brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important thing to do, because right now, a lot of the corporations that have been pulling their ads, they have a much, much broader issue which they can focus on, which a lot of people agree with, which is, you know, we're not anti-women, because it's probably a big part of our constituency. And so this would be a place to keep pushing. And so I think that's, that's the other thing that I like to talk about, which is how, when you've got a situation like this and you've started to convince advertisers, then it's going to be the advertisers hearing back from the station, whatever, what can I use to stick around? You know, what can I, you know, what kind of tricks can I use? And you're seeing this right now with Brent Bozell and other people with the I Stand With Rush. They're going to try and turn this into a free speech story.
Right.
They're going to try and turn it into Rush's The Victim story. But what this is, when you're talking to the advertisers, you turn it into a market story. This is not about free speech. It's not about his First Amendment rights. It's about the right of the company to choose who to associate their brand with.
Yes.
And that's a big part of what that was. Now, I talked with Angelo, who I believe you talked earlier,
right,
and when we talked about this and his process, as well as I talked with the people at Color Change, I say, okay, now you've got a bunch of advertisers who have left, who've believed you. You've given them the words. You've helped them, you know, if they've got all sorts of weasel words and delaying tactics, like we're reevaluating it, or they'll say things like, oh, we didn't even know it. You know, and that's something where you find out from the ad buy side that a lot of times, sometimes advertisers will throw on free ads on certain shows, which I found interestingly. But then, which is the next stage, which is, okay, so now you've got a bunch of people right now, I guess.
Actually, I want to interrupt you there, because you touched on something I wanted to ask before we move on to where the advertisers are already off. One of those tactics that left me puzzled, I used to sell advertising. I sold advertising for radio for 2 years, then moved into TV. Worst salesperson in the history of the world, which is why I ended up on this side of the mic. But one thing I would hear the company say, we have no control over where our advertising lands. Now, I know as a former ad exec, yes, you do. But the question in my mind is, I know some of them say that as an excuse. I wonder if some of them really believe that, if it's never occurred to them that if you get a bonus spot, what they call an ROS, a run of the station spot, that you can say, if you are signing the check, you can say it doesn't run in there. Did you find in talking to different advertisers, some of them literally don't know that?
Oh, yeah. And
wow.
There's two funny ones about that. One was, for a while, there's two advertisers on the Sussman show, and Brian Sussman, very anti-gay rights. He was against Proposition 8. And, or wait, was he for it?
He's for Prop 8.
Okay. And one of the advertisers was Beach Blanket Babylon, which I'm thinking is a pretty
mismatch.
Yeah, pretty gay friendly kind of group. And I went up and looked up Steve Silver and his background and his work on AIDS. I then contacted the people there, and they insisted they didn't advertise on it. As a matter of fact, they contacted their own ad sales rep, and they said, no, we didn't buy anything like that. So I sent them the audio clip. Here is them on the show. Here's the station ID. So it turns out, as they dug deeper, is that KGO was selling
the
ads,
sister station to
KSFO, and they were selling them to KGO. But because KSFO had lost so many ads, they threw in for free, I don't know, what did you call it, a bonus?
Yeah,
for free, these ads on this show, which is a terrible mismatch, okay? But they didn't know it. And the ad sales are, hey, I'm giving you something, you know, for free. So I had to then go back to the advertiser and say, you not only need to know that this is what's happening, you need to tell them explicitly not to do that. This
right.
is the little games that the ad reps, you know, play in order to get new advertisers. And it was, for a while, really like kind of whack-a-mole, because they would come back and then they would say, oh, well, we did this. The other example of this one was with the group Bravo TV was just starting to be the host for the TV show Project Runway.
Oh, and, a vigorously anti-gay show.
Yeah. And so not only that, but the woman who was the marketing person I knew happened to have some, you know, real support against domestic violence. And she was very involved in that. So I sent her some audio clips showing the, you know, where Lee Rogers talking about punching some, you know, women and other types of clips. And then she contacted me and she said, I had no idea that this was going on. And I need to check in with my, you know, my ad salespeople. And this is the thing. There's so much of what we do looks like it's just algorithms. You know, there's a, you know, a spreadsheet here and there. But I think this is one thing that people need to look into is saying, when you are going to try and persuade somebody, you need to understand what they care about and how to help them, you know, make that happen. So if they care about certain issues, then you say, these people are doing the exact thing that you hate. You know, they're doing it. So, you know, give them that information.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, after you develop those things, then you can maybe get an army of people who would then, you know, tweet and say, you know, do this, do that. But getting down to the base core of it, you need to help people see that. And so this is a little bit about, you know, I don't want to get into applying narratives, but one of the things that I think that in terms of activism on the left, it is hard for us to push things sometimes pro, but we're very good at dealing with an overreaction and dealing with somebody who's a bully.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I found out, and you would see it, and we're seeing it right now in terms of the Sandra Fluke thing. I knew that KSFO were bullies, and bullies in a different kind of way. They'll then turn around and try and pretend like they're the victim. There's this asynchronous nature of power. And I think that that's one of the reasons why the Rush thing took off, is because he was a bully on somebody who wasn't in the usual base. It wasn't a politician. It wasn't somebody the same size. It was somebody who was, you know, there. That we can then use that to, you know, go back and say, hey, everybody hates bullies. You know, this is something that we could do. So when KSFO, after I've been telling advertisers, MasterCard pulled their ads, Visa pulled their ads, KSFO freaked out. They then went to their parent corporation, ABC Disney at the time, and they filed a bogus copyright claim, infringement claim on me. Now, this is a whole other battle that I needed to fight, and I successfully fought it, you know, to help all the other activists out there, was the ability to understand how you can use these audio clips and fair use and understand the copyright issues was a battle that I fought, and with the help of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And then I then taught the exact same techniques to a group called Hate Hurts America, which was an ecumenical religious organization, about their Michael Savage's anti-gay activities.
We're going to get back to that in just a minute. I want to remind you that you're listening to In Deep Radio. I'm Angie Coiro. If you've missed any part of the show, you're welcome to hear the whole thing by going to indeepradio.com. This is a topic we'll come back to frequently. Being a good activist, being an effective activist. So if you have any contributions on that topic, you can send that to us via the webpage as well, and we'll be happy to grab that. Spacco is the name by which my guest goes. He does a lot of his work sub rosa. He does other work up above the ground. We won't go into that. But we're listening to his very valuable experiences, first targeting KSFO on the West Coast, San Francisco Bay Area, and then moving on to Michael Savage, who, in fact, has a national profile, Spacco. Michael Savage did go national from the Bay Area.
Right. The action with Michael Savage, and this is something that I think I also learned because I looked at some of the Stop Savage work, was Michael Savage turned himself into a free speech martyr after any kinds of attempts to get him off the air. And which is very annoying to me. And is also, but although it did teach me is like that when I was going to defund KSFO, I wasn't, you know, concerned about getting, you know, Melanie Morgan and Lee Rogers or Brian Sussman off the air. What I wanted to do is make it less profitable for them. that
and
was,
they're all still working.
Right.
They all still have a job.
No, actually, Lee Rogers was forced out.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And but Melanie Morgan was fired, and they were saying, and this is a I don't want to get into inside baseball, but one of the premises was, if you have a financial story and you can use financial leverage, then it's a little bit longer game. You know, I wasn't able to, and I wasn't concerned about getting her off the air. I wasn't concerned about getting her fired. What I wanted to do is show not only the advertisers, but also the station management, that this now, what you thought was an asset, is actually a liability. And when they lost the advertisers, and eventually I calculated, and I've got, letters to prove it, they lost 32 advertisers. Insiders at the station said, there's more, but they can't, tell me that. And I then went to the financial documents of their parent corporation and read what they had to say about the revenue stream coming out of San Francisco. Only two stations, KSFO, KGO. And in their financial document, they said, we lost money in San Francisco. Now, where would that have come from? Not from the very popular KGO. And when they lost money, they said, they looked around and say, who's costing us the most money? Melanie Morgan and Lee Rogers. Melanie Morgan's contract was up, and they said, okay, here's one way we can do it. Then, of course, I could have pressed harder and told all the media that, it was because of me, but there were also financial, Citadel had acquired a tremendous amount of debt. And so that was the excuse that the corporations use. And if anybody's ever been laid off for financial reasons knows that's a great excuse that corporations use when they want to let somebody go. Sorry, we're just not making enough money. Because if they fired them for, cause or whatever, then they would say, well, and they would come back and sue them. So that's what Lee Rogers did when he was fired a year later.
We're going to come back to more with Spacco here on Angie Cuero. I forgot my name. How bad is that? You're a great storyteller, and you may be absorbed here. Angie Cuero on In Deep Radio. We're talking about effective activism, the Rush boycott, and beyond. You can follow us on Twitter at In Deep Radio. We're on Facebook, too. In Deep with Angie Cuero. We're going to be right back here in a few moments, so do stick around. This is In Deep.
Slow, nowhere to go. But oh, that magic
This is In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro. Thanks for tuning in. I'm talking to Spocko, longtime activist, starting here in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's now had national effect. And what with going on with the Rush boycott, we thought it was a good time to get an instructional for you, a tutorial. So that is what we're talking about. Spocko, when we left off, you were talking about the power of the lawyers coming in. And that's something that an activist needs to brace themselves for. In fact, we discussed this on the show just a week ago, because when the Heartland Institute documents came out, the first thing they did was send out the lawyers, and any website that published any part of those documents was immediately told to pull them on pain of lawsuit. What's the reality there when faced with lawyers like that? Do you go in your hole and sit down? What do you do?
Well, I think part of it is understanding up front that sometimes the lawyers are into saber-rattling. There's things that they can say that they can't actually do. But I'll recommend people going to Electronic Frontier Foundation, which has an incredibly good guide for bloggers and knowing what they can and can't do and say, and that's useful. I also go to the Center for Professional Journalists. I think they have some guidelines for certain things you can do, and one of the guidelines they have is, can we tape, for knowing what are the rules if you're going to do any kind of audio clips or video or those kinds of things. The other thing is about a lawyer part of it is I look at what kinds of things the people who are defended by lawyers, what it is that they are worried, where places where they can overextend and they overreach and they go beyond what they're supposed to do. We're talking about in some ways, the consequences of what people say on the radio. And it's always interesting is that radio, I believe, is incredibly powerful because it can just go right into your, right into your head with not as much thinking that's going on. And if you understand that, and people, advertisers buy that as well, then we say we can use that exact same sensibility to them and say, if you believe radio is powerful and they say these horrible things, then you need to understand that you are going to be associated with these horrible things.
This is just a consistent thread. Yeah, I keep hearing you. You always come back to getting into the other guy's head, looking at it from their point of view, right, which is a long way from saying, I, the listener, object to this, which the answer to that is normally, so what? I can get another listener.
And here's the thing, too, is like during a time of when we were starting to pull out of Iraq, Lee Rogers said, I have the actual audio clip on my blog. Said if you people don't pay attention, do things right, we're gonna kill you. We're gonna kill all of you. We're basically called for a genocide of the Iraqi people. He was serious. Again, that's to get away from, I'm just an entertainer. It wasn't necessarily hyperbole because he said things like this before, specific. And he was going, because it was a general threat, in some ways it was, maybe he didn't really mean it. So what I did with that audio clip, I turned out that during the time that he was saying that, the ambassador for Iraq was in San Francisco looking to see whether or not we should put a consulate in San Francisco. So what did I do? I made sure that the people in the Iraq State Department, the U.S. State Department, as well as the Iraqi ambassador said, by the way, in case you do decide to come to San Francisco, here's what the top morning show host would say if you had turned on the radio in your cab drive looking for places to do. And I made sure that not only that Lee Rogers' bosses knew about this, but I also let sure that the State Department and the Tourism Bureau and the development people in San Francisco knew about this.
What kind of response did you get from them?
This is one of those things where, again, you can't always know what the responses are. But I used the personality of this particular host, Lee Rogers, Mr. Tough Guy, who would never apologize or never do anything, to his disadvantage. I took his strength and turned it into a weakness. I happen to know that there was, behind the scenes, phone calls and stuff like that. And he got really upset. He then thought that it was, CARE, or this Muslim group, doing this. I was like, there's a reason that they heard about this. It was me. I wanted them to know that he was calling for genocide of these people. Now, I don't know if that was the final thing that ended up that he got fired over. It might have been something else. But that was so egregious that his Citadel management let him go 6 months early in his contract. Of course, because he's a good union member, he turned around and sued them. And
like the lefty socialist he denies being.
Exactly. And he won that case, you know. So that was, he's like, you know, I use my union dues effectively. So that was an interesting story as well. He's now in Arizona writing a cranky column. That's Lee.
Well, let's talk about one thing that you were invited to do. And I see a lot of people who are willing to do this. And that is to engage the talk show hosts on their own turf. They can go in and talk. They can get on the phone and talk. You had the chance to do that. You opted out. Why?
It's a tilted field. I mean, it's always in their favor. They control the volume. They control the microphone. And the professionals. They are professional debaters. And most people aren't. And that's not my style. My friend Mike Stark can do this sometimes by calling these people out. And, you know, making a certain kind of point. Not my style. And if people want to do that, I think it's a useful thing to do. But I decided to go figure out what the leverage point was. What do they care about and what do their bosses care about? In this case, it was the money. Read the financial statements. Say, what do they care about making this amount of money? Say, what do you do to cut that off? And I looked and they say, it all comes from advertisers. One of the things I did find out, though, when you come in between a organization and their revenue stream, they get very annoyed and mm-hmm. they get very upset and they will lash back. And this is something I wanted to tell people is like, this is what we're going to see coming up next with this, with Rush Singh. The next steps are going to be, they're going to start getting sponsors from the Right Wing Heritage Foundation that will be filling up the empty spots. There will be some advertisers that said, hey, we're happy with the fact that you think that these women are terrible. They will be, I think, Ashley Madison, the website that helps you cheat on your husband.
Oh, he denies that, by the way. He denies that very fervently. Oh. I haven't gotten to the bottom of that one yet.
Okay. and this is, you know, how the organizations respond is a tricky target. If we're going to want to escalate this and to keep working, there's a couple of ways to do it. And I'll tell you what I did with the Color of Change and working with after the Glenn Beck had gotten a bunch of advertisers off the air. I called up the financial conference call for News Corporation in the third quarter of 2010. And I asked Rupert Murdoch this question. I say, you know, I know you don't break down these figures, but due to the Color of Change action, Glenn Beck's lost 81 advertisers and nothing seems to be there but gold ads and house ads. How long are you going to keep subsidizing Glenn Beck until his revenue is in line with his ratings? Now, this was a message that I was getting to the institutional investors as well as to the other people saying, hey, we're not talking about what he says. We're talking about revenue streams.
Is he good money?
Is he good money? And he's not. And unless, you know, Rupert Murdoch's going to pay for this out of his own pocket, we as the shareholders, we demand higher quarterly returns. Now, Rupert, of course, you know, I dispute that number. He is like this. He's a great lead in for this, like that. Well, that then gave the media an opportunity to talk about the advertisers leaving again. And by the way, I never use the term boycott. Boycott, to me, in the certain in the traditional sense, it turns into like threatening somebody. Like, you know, advertisers don't like it. And mm-hmm. so I always told my followers not to do it, write polite letters, and help them decide themselves. So what happened after that? It gave the media an opportunity to revisit the story. They then found out that there was more than that. And there was eventually one of the ad salespeople inside who's not making any money says, yeah, they're not only the 81, but there's almost 300 that refused to be on. And then when I said to Angelo, stop back, I said, this is the number we now have to start using. You know, let people know it's 300 because it was quoted in the New York Times. This is the other part about using the media. The media has a certain news cycle, and they need to do their he said, she said, and they have to have experts, and the news needs to keep going. Helping the media get new pieces of information is important. And I've got, 25 years in, PR, corporate communications. I help corporations, make money by telling interesting stories and, preparing them to, do stories. And I must prefer having helped Google become, huge. But it is satisfying to help cost some of these people money, because the thing is, they're not out to, for our best interest. They'd be happy to attack you and destroy you. But that's one of the things that that I think also people need to understand.
Well, let's look at the two extremes of results that we can look for. There's an article that just came up today. There's a local radio columnist named Rich Lieberman, and he's quoting some inside sources on Michael Savage, on what's become of Michael Savage. And he says he's essentially banned in San Francisco. Second most popular, I'm reading directly from Rich Lieberman's now, the second most popular radio personality in the country isn't on the air in the Bay Area. Nobody even wants to touch him. A local broadcast exec told me, Rich Lieberman, Michael is extremely demanding and difficult to negotiate with. While he attracts listeners and ratings, it's a challenge to sell. He's too many fill-in hosts, too many shows where he challenges Limbaugh, not even cleared in the three largest markets, means he's not on the air there. He does a clever, engaging show. He's simply not worth the effort. I don't want him on the air because he's too much trouble. Trouble goes well beyond which advertisers he might alienate, but surely that's a piece of the pie. Now, the flip side of that, he's not on the air here, but we look and the people that you've attacked, Melanie Morgan, Brian Sussman, they are back on the air, back on KSFO, doing the morning show now. So between those two extremes, one is still on the air, but they're having to watch their step more than they did before. One is not here at all. What's the best we can hope for when we look at Rush Limbaugh?
What you just said, one is watching what he says. That's going to be, will that have impact? We already know it has an impact. I think one of the things that people point out, he spent 3 days attacking her. It was, and so now it has one apology. He's supposedly made a second apology. This will be what people will be focusing on if they want to come back for advertisers. But can we see more advertisers leaving? I think we will. And then there, he's going to have to do certain types of things to change that. Will he go into apology mode? I don't actually think so.
It's not in his nature.
He's going to double down. He's going to say how he's being a victim and he's being attacked, etc. And he's going to give advertisers an excuse. I mean, this will be the other thing. He's going to either find a sugar daddy like the Heritage Foundation and other people like that, or he's going to say, I know he's a moving target and a slow moving target, but for us, I think we've already won in a way. That's the thing is we've started the process and we are going to keep going. And he's going to do a lot of things to try and, stop it.
I'm talking to Spocko as you are listening to Indeep. One thing that occurs to me while we're talking is the amount of passion you have, the amount of detail you were willing to go into. I mean, contacting the FCC, contacting, funders, blah, blah, blah. Most people would be intimidated by that. If I've got two kids and I'm pursuing a degree, are there small things I could do on my own, or is there a larger organization doing this kind of things where I can do my small part over there?
Right. And people have already done some of the work. We have some new tools that are very easy to use. One thing, if you want to kind of keep up on, say, who's the most recent list of advertisers, I know Media Matters has a link on which advertisers are out there that you can do. And the other thing is now a number of organizations have sent out petitions and they sent out their actions letters and they say, tweet this. Mm-hmm. And if those of you who are on Twitter, you can tweet to an advertiser, say, maybe you want to reconsider. being on the Limbaugh show. And then you can find those lists on Media Matters, I know has some, and a number of different organizations. I know that Color Change sent out those. So you might be one of the people getting some of those letters.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is if you wanted to, you know, do your Facebook profile and say that you find this egregious and list some of those advertisers know. Also, the other thing I like to do is tell people to thank the advertisers that have pulled and say, please don't go back because he has a repeating pattern of this behavior.
Yes.
That would be something that they would want to know. Don't threaten. Don't tell them, you know, I'll never buy your product again if you go back. Just let them know. Say, you profile flowers, thank you for doing this. And please realize that he may apologize, but he will hide and wait, and he'll probably say the same thing soon.
What's your sense of how effective petitions are? I know I was watching on Twitter as this particular situation was evolving, and some people were saying, you know, yes, sign this. And the other people were saying, boy, if I have to sign another stupid petition and they don't do any good anyway.
I think this is the petition things, and I have friends who work with change.org. I think one thing that's different about petitions now versus maybe later, a lot of times petitions would go to legislators and those types of things. And there wasn't a back and forth mechanism. Because so many corporations want to get on social media and talk directly to their customers, there's the other side where the customers talk back. And they notice it, and they monitor their Twitter feed, and they look at their Facebook page. So this is your opportunity to take that utilization of their new awareness of their customers. That's one of the problems previously when I was doing that. It's easy to ignore certain types of things. You could ignore an email, you could ignore a phone, because there's only just one person. Now you have the tools to talk back to those people in a way that they need to pay attention to because they want your business.
It's been a real pleasure having you here. I know you're going to go on doing this, so we'll go on talking to you about it.
Thanks. Looking forward to it. He says in his deeper, more masculine voice.
One of his many aliases, Spocko. You'll find his work online at spockosbrain.com. We thank him very much for coming in here. And that's a wrap on our show for this week. Thanks for tuning in to In Deep. You can follow us on Twitter at In Deep Radio. We're on Facebook, too. In Deep with Angie Coiro. Our executive producer is Gordon Whiting. Matt Fidler is our engineer who sticks it out with us. Our theme is by Big Troubles. David Gans provides our closing music. Visit us online at indeed.com for web-only extras this week from the political carnivals, Gotta Laugh, and more. We're back next week to once again go In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro. Bye-bye.
It's going to get worse before it gets better, but I know it's going to get better.
Thanks for tuning in this week to In Deep, which is a production of Live from the Left Coast. You can get more information on the show and our company at lftlc.com. Live from the Left Coast. While you're there, you can become a member and support our work. We have a separate website for the show that is indeep.org. If you have any questions or feedback, there's a contact button right there, indeep.org. We are developing a recurring series on mental health issues in our country, especially in this economy. And you're a big part of that. We'd like your topic suggestions, your stories, and your questions. Send them in via our website, the contact button at indeep.org. Join us again this time next week for two more hours of in-depth conversation. I'm Angie Coiro. Thanks, and we will see you then. You're listening to WPWC, 1480 AM, Dumfries, Virginia. We Act Radio, home of Washington's progressive working community.